This is Mac Format This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, Mac tips you can count on.
The Mac is stuffed full of tips, tricks, and shortcuts that can make your Mac using life much easier. We've gathered together 200 of them in the latest issue of Mac Format, and we're going to go over a few of them in this podcast.
And also coming up, after 200 issues of Mac Format, we look back on Apple's colorful history.
Nobody puts on a show as good as Steve Jobs, really, and he makes technology interesting, but it kind of also helps he's got such great technology to talk about.
Graham Barlow walks down Apple's memory lane and tells you how you can win an iPod Touch. Plus, product reviews with James Ellerbeck and Q&A on this edition of Mac Format This Week. With the resources of Mac Format Magazine, this is Mac Format This Week. Hello, everyone. I'm Brad Gibson. Everyone who uses a Mac knows a few tips, tricks, and shortcuts of their own, and one of the great things about Mac users is that they love to share them with others. What's great about these tips is that they teach you a lot about troubleshooting common Mac problems and fixing those problems without shelling out big bucks for commercial solutions. Well, to celebrate 200 issues of Mac Format, we put together 200 of these great tips into an 18-page feature entitled 200 Unmissable Mac Tips. And joining us over the next two episodes to feature some of those great tips is Mac Format Deputy Editor Chris Finn. Chris, thanks for being with us again.
Always good to hear your voice, Brad.
Yours too, Chris. Let's get right into so many of these tips, and we're going to spread them out over two different shows. And let's begin with the first one that is on page 28, and that's disabling automatic login, which, quite frankly, is a lot of people don't know about and is a little bit complex to understand. Explain it.
Sure thing. The first time you set up a Mac, if you're the only user on that Mac, it automatically logs you into that user when you boot up the Mac. So you get your Mac, you open your laptop, or you sit down at your iMac, let's say you power it on, and it will boot up Mac OS X and log you into your user account. And that's fine, and it's very, very convenient. But the problem with that is it's not very secure.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a bunch of different users on my computers. Partly, I use one for taking screenshots. I use one for doing some shopping. I use different users for different things. So automatically, because I've got different users set up, I'm prompted to log into one of those users when the Mac starts up. But even if you only have one account active, I still recommend, and indeed Holland recommends, the guy who wrote the feature recommends, switching that automatic login off. Is much more secure because it means that when you switch on your Mac, or if someone steals your Mac and switches that Mac on, they'll be presented with a login screen. They can't do anything unless they know your password.
Okay, number two is customizing application toolbars. I mean, more or less every application running on OS X has a toolbar where certain key controls and buttons live, right?
Sure. Right up at the top of the screen, let's take Mail as an example. You'll see a bunch of different buttons up there for doing different commands, getting mail, marking new mail as read, replying to mail, that sort of stuff. The good thing is you can actually, in most cases, as Holland says, you can personalize which icons appear up there and in which order. Normally, you go into the View menu and choose Customize Toolbar. And there's quite often a drop-down sheet comes with a bunch of different buttons in there. You can drag up to that toolbar. You can rearrange them. You can put in dividers. You can put in spaces. You can put in flexible spaces that will sort of stretch to fill the space available to keep different elements apart. My mail toolbar looks nothing like my wife's mail toolbar because it's tuned to the way I work, and it shows only the stuff I want. And additionally, I've got the text turned off on mine, so mine only shows icons. It doesn't show the text. They're not taking up screen space. I can really get there. I can get going with my mail, and it's absolutely how I like to use it.
Okay, tip number three is about opening multiple libraries. Now, this is useful for keeping different sets of data separate.
Yeah, sure. This tip applies really to management apps like iPhoto and iTunes. And the idea is that when you launch one of those two applications and hold down the Alt key or the Option key when they launch, you'll be asked to choose a library. Now, by default, your iTunes library or your iPhoto library is saved into your home folder in the library in the music and the pictures folders, depending on which application it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to. You can store them wherever you want. So, for example, here's a good usage scenario for this tip. Let's say you've got a MacBook Air. A MacBook Air has a fairly small hard disk in it, and it's not easy to upgrade that hard disk. What you might want to do is you might want to have iTunes library on your MacBook Air that only has 3-4 gigabytes of music in it, but you might want to have another library on an external hard disk or even on a network attached storage device at home that is much, much bigger. So what you would do, you'd have your music on your MacBook Air, you'd launch iTunes, hold down Alt, you'd say create a new library, tell it where you wanted to store it, i.e. on this external disk, put all your music and videos and stuff into that library, and now whenever you want to toggle between those two libraries, just hold down Alt when you launch iTunes, and you can choose which one to pick. It's a really, really handy way of keeping things separate. You can use it for different library types or different usage scenarios, whatever you want. Good tip.
Yeah, that's a really helpful tip. It really is. Let's go on to the next one, and that is using keywords in iPhoto. And a lot of people don't realize that you can do this, and it's just another great way of keeping track of your photos and searching them out by, you know, the name of the people in the photo, et cetera, et cetera.
That's a perfect example for it, Brad. The problem is it takes a bit of discipline to do it. The best time to do it really is when you're either new to the Mac or you've just got a digital camera. Each photograph that you take, you should attach keywords to. And then what you can do is, A, you can search for them. Yep, that's fantastic. But you can also build smart albums within iPhoto that use those keywords. So you could say, show me all the photographs that contain me and my wife and that I've rated 3 stars or higher. And that way, automatically, you've got a fantastic resource that's automatically and dynamically updated from your photo library each time you add and tag new photographs.
That is really cool. That sounds really neat. All right, now let's move on to web widgets. And if you have an iWeb page, the great thing about using iWeb is that you can take the web widgets and feature them within the application.
Anyone who knows me knows I'm not a big fan of iWeb. I find it a bit too restrictive, but at least in the latest version of iWeb, you actually do have the chance to import different elements. So you can actually create these little pages, these little blocks within your iWeb pages that contain, let's say, AdSense data so that you can put adverts onto your site, stuff like that. It's one of those things that actually does extend out the usage of iWeb. So it's not just like pictures and text. You can actually create these little HTML frames and drop content into them. It does make iWeb that little bit more useful than it would be otherwise.
Let's move on to memory, and this is one of the most fundamental things that affects the performance of a computer, and that is RAM. If there's anything you're going to spend money on, Chris, you should think about RAM first because it affects everything. I don't care what application you're running.
Yeah, I mean, RAM is one of those things that really will affect the performance of your Mac. It's particularly true if you're doing very sort of intensive stuff that requires, if you're using really big images in Photoshop or stuff like that. But for anyone, absolutely for anyone, RAM it will make a huge, huge difference. I've got a Mac Mini at home that I use in my media center, which came with a stock 512 megabytes of memory in it. I put a couple of gig in there, and it absolutely flew.
All right, let's talk about FireWire, because a lot of people think that with USB version 2.0 that USB is faster than FireWire, but really it's not.
Yeah, and to be honest, there's a lot of reasons why people would think that. The theoretical maximum throughput speed for USB 2.0 is 480 megabits per second. For the original FireWire implementation, it's 400 megabits per second, so 80 megabits per second slower, apparently, than USB 2 is. But there's actually a very good technical explanation for why that doesn't matter a damn, and I won't go into it here, but what I will say is that whenever we do tests, whenever I've done tests in my years of doing Mac journalism, I've always found that, in general, all other things being equal, FireWire is usually about twice as fast as USB 2
right.
is for data transfer. And obviously, if you move then to FireWire 800, which is the twice as fast sort of standard, you'll notice the difference being even greater. So if you've got a choice with your peripherals, use FireWire, don't use USB.
Okay, now our final tip for this episode is revealing the location of a file. I mean, if you need to quickly find the location of a file that you're working on, but you're not sure where it resides, there's a quick way of finding it.
There is, and this is actually something that I highlighted in the last issue of Mac Format in the tutorial intro page. It's a really, really handy tip. Basically, pretty much with any file that you have open on your screen, if you hold down the Command key, that's the key with the little Apple logo on it, mm-hmm. or that sort of cloverleaf sort of design, hold that key down and click on the name of the document in the title bar at the top. What that'll do is it'll show you a drop-down list, a file path of where that file is. So Brad and I are recording this podcast in a particular audio program. If I command-click on the title of the track within that program, it'll show me exactly where I've saved that file. So it'll show me it's on my Macintosh large hard disk, in users, in Chris, in desktop, and that's where it is. It's a really, really handy way of doing it. Obviously, it won't work if you're in a sort of a file you haven't saved, like an untitled file.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's something that's been saved in your hard disk that you're opening up, you can do that. One extra little tip that Holland didn't quite have space to talk about in the magazine in the feature is that it works as well in Safari. If you're on a particular web page in Safari and you hold down the command key, click on the title, you'll actually be shown the sort of web path to that specific page, cutting back a level each time. So it's if it's at macformat.co.uk/blog/podcast/ and then the entry title, you can actually come back left through those slashes to come up to earlier, higher up parts of that web page. It's a really handy way of navigating around a website, particularly if you come to if you've got a permalink into a sort of deep link within a website. Use that, you can go straight back to the homepage or to a specific part within that very, very quickly.
Yeah, very handy. Okay, those are 7 great tips. We'll have more in the next show, such as essential programs. We'll look at some simple Mac solutions, how to share the internet, trashing preference files, things like that. We'll cover all those on our next show. Chris, thanks so much for going over many of these great Mac tips.
No worries, Brad. I'll see you next episode for even more of them.
Chris Finn is the deputy editor of Mac Format. The feature entitled 200 Unmissable Mac Tips begins on page 26 in the October issue, which is on sale now. With the October issue, Mac Format is celebrating its 200th birthday. 200 issues since 1993. Now, if you're a longtime Mac user, you know that dates back to Apple's release of its Performa line of Macs. It came with a 16 megahertz, 68,030 PowerPC processor, 4 megs of memory, and a 40 megabyte hard drive for right around 800 pounds. We've come a long way since then in terms of technology and Mac Format. Joining us to look back just a little is the current editor of Mac Format, Graham Barlow, to reminisce about the past 15 years and also tell you how you can enter to win our 200th birthday party giveaway of an iPod Touch. Graham, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Brad. Good to be here. How are you?
Very good. There's a great look back at the history of Mac Format and the Mac in the October issue, and it really is a walk down memory lane, isn't it?
Well, that's right. When Mac Format was launched back in 93, Apple were, for the first time, going to the consumer market with their Macs, because previously to that they'd been very much professional machines. They were used extensively in the publishing industry, and they were now trying to get them into the home. So it's a kind of a head-on battle with Microsoft Windows and the IBM compatibles.
Mm-hmm.
And strangely, we seem to have come full circle, because in 2008, here we are, and Apple are once again making inroads into the home.
Yeah, it really is an interesting look back at the history of where we are and where we were and where we are now. And like you said, it's very much a mirror image of what it has been so many times over the years. Now, you're not the original editor of Mac Format. I mean, if you were, you'd be really old at this point, which I know you're not. You've been with the magazine since August of 2004. But in looking back over the years, what's the biggest thing that stands out to you about the last 15 years for the Mac and Mac Format?
Yeah, that's right. I joined in August 2004, and just after I joined, they introduced the iMac G5, which is the white model with the integrated EyeSight camera, and that was quite a big launch. I remember being in Paris, and Steve Jobs had flown over, and he was giving his keynote, and the iMac appeared through the bottom of the stage on a special kind of raised plinth, and he took the cover off it, and it was all very dramatic.
Keynotes are really interesting. There really are a remembrance of each year.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, nobody puts on a show as good as Steve Jobs, really. I don't want to be too sycophantic about him, but he does put on a great show, and he makes technology interesting. But it kind of also helps he's got such great technology to talk about. We're all in the Mac industry because we're basically fans of the Mac. We like the whole operating system, the ethos that surrounds it, all the kind of peripheral devices like the iPhone and iPod Touch and everything like that.
One of the things that really stands out to me when you look at the history of technology and in the pages of this story that we're talking about is that things change so dramatically in technology. And, you know, you hear people complain of, I just bought my Mac and it's less than a year old and there's always something new. There's already something new. But you can really tell that technology does dramatically change over time. And you can see that in this story.
That's right. You know, we to celebrate, you know, 200 issues of Mac Format, we've kind of looked back over the history of the magazine, which kind of also parallels the history of Apple. And just looking at the covers, we've got every single cover of the magazine in this feature, and you can kind of see all the new stuff coming out. You know, when it was launched, when it was brand new, and now it looks kind of so old and dated. But it's just the sheer rate of turnover of ideas from Apple is quite astounding.
Yeah, it really is. Now, let's get right to the thing that we really want to tell people about, and that is to mark our bicentennial celebrations of the 200th issue, Apple is giving away, or we're giving away, courtesy of Apple, a iPod Touch 16 gig as a prize. And tell everybody how they can enter this contest online.
That's right. To help us celebrate the first 200 issues of Mac Format, Apple are giving away an iPod Touch. All the podcast listeners can also enter the competition. To enter the competition, all you need to do is go to macformat.co.uk. At the website, you'll see a list of topics, categories down the left-hand side. At the bottom there is competition. If you click on that, you'll be able to enter all our competitions, and you'll see the iPod Touch compo is currently the one that's the first on the page.
And what we'll do is right now, if you're watching on the Enhanced Podcast, we have a link directly to this page that we're talking about for the competition, so it's much easier to get through to if you're watching on your desktop PC. So again, a 16-gigabyte iPod Touch that we're giving away courtesy of Apple for our bicentennial celebration, and you'll want to definitely enter the contest. What the heck, you might as well. Good chance you might win.
Oh, I should just add, before I go, that unfortunately only UK residents can enter the competition. It's a law to do with how competitions are handled, so we can't have people from outside of the UK entering our UK competition. It's not our fault. Please don't blame us.
Exactly. The law of the UK. So we understand that. But still, I hope that people will have a chance to check out the Happy Birthday Mac Format story, which is on page 20 in the October issue. It really is kind of an interesting look back at the past. And guess what? We even get to see a now and then picture of you.
I know, and I appear to have just got slightly fatter.
Just slightly, but the other thing is you appear to have gotten a lot lighter, but what we should tell people is in the then photo, there's this big shadow on your right-hand side. So in the now photo, maybe you look a little bigger simply because of the lighting. Can we use that excuse?
No, do you know what it was? The then photo was taken just after my honeymoon, so I'd been in
right.
Italy for two weeks just kind of sunbathing. So I was a little more tanned. Since then, I've never seen the sun.
Right,
I've
exactly.
Pale faced and pasty.
Well,
so that's
and if people who are listening to this who are not in the UK, they should know this summer has really not been a summer again, like last summer. We've had so much rain, so there hasn't been a lot of sun, so that probably is why you're pasty white.
Okay, I think we're probably waffling now. Let's get back to the. Information.
I know. Graham, thanks so much for going over this. It's a great story, and people in the UK can enter the contest and hope that they will. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Brad. Bye.
Graham Barlow was the editor of Mac Format. A nostalgic look back at the 200 issues of Mac Format begins on page 20 in the October issue, which is on sale now. Every month in Mac Format magazine, you can find lots of reviews of software and hardware. In fact, in the October issue, 15 pages, 8 software, 13 hardware. And the guy who does a lot of those reviews and oversees them is James Ellerbeck. He joins us to go over 3 great products from October. Hi, James.
Hi, Brad. How are you?
I'm very good. Let's start with Smith Micro's Internet Cleanup version 5. It basically is a privacy protector, and it cleans away traces of the internet from your Mac, but really it wasn't exactly what you thought it was going to be, was it?
Well, it's not what I think buyers will think it's going to be. It's one of those products which is aimed at people who don't really know how to use their Mac expertly or with a degree of sort of moderate competency even, because what it does is it cleans away the cookies and the cached files that you pick up when you just surf around the internet. It's one of the problems with surfing around the internet. There's no real way to get around it practically, is that you're just going to pick up lots of cookies from all the sites you visit, and mm-hmm. companies are going to use those cookies to track mm-hmm. your behavior.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the tools, just a few of them. And if you can, at the same time, tell us how you would do it manually or another way other than having internet cleanup.
Okay, so you've got three categories of tools. You get the web browser maintenance tools, you get privacy protection tools, and system protection tools. So let's take, for example, the web browser tools, which are probably the main reason why you get the app. It's got things like Cookie Finder or Internet File Finder. It's got a Web History Finder. And what each of these do is it's just a little search engine, goes off, hunts around your Mac to find certain types of files, which are the formats used in on the internet for you know, transfer of data. But for example, the cookie finder, you can very quickly find cookies on your own Mac if you know your way around the OS. You can find them, but you can also find them through the majority of browsers that people use. What do people use? They use Safari. They use Firefox.
Right.
I'd say 95% of people do. If you go into the preferences of either ones of those, you can quickly find your cookies. You can delete them. You can empty your cached files. One of the problems is that with internet cleanup, it will go off and list all the cookies that are on your system, but there's no way to tell what cookies what. I'll give you an example. One cookie was E1C85A86D01, which was a cached plain text file. And then further on down, there was F1708.
Oh, Jesus, you know, so I get the point. There's no way, yeah. good way of identifying these.
How do you know which one's what?
So right.
You just end up just playing it safe, and you get rid of all of them. And then, but then the next time you go to eBay, you find that your browser doesn't know your password anymore or any of your...
Right.
It just seems moronic to me.
Okay, so let's move on here to the privacy protection and give another example here. Let's say, for instance, Secure Delete. Okay, now that product basically is essentially the same as OS X's Secure Empty Trash in that it overwrites trashed files again, except that Secure Delete gives you the option to write over deleted files 40 times. But why would you need to do that?
It might look good on the box, I don't know, or next on the advertising that goes with it, that you can... I mean, it's like if you run over somebody in a car and then you go back and run over them 40 times, it was the first time you hit them that was the problem. It's the kind of tool that somebody who doesn't really know their way around a Mac, or particularly somebody who's come over from the Windows platform and is really worried about viruses and what have you, they will look at this and say, oh, I need to get this on a Mac because I have something similar on a PC. Because no, you don't really need it.
Yeah, okay. So the bottom line here is 2.5 out of 5 stars. It really gave you a lot of things that, as you said in your review, if you just read the manual of the Mac or a good book, you can find a lot of these same features that already exist in many of the applications or web browsers that you're using, right?
Absolutely. But also when you get Internet Cleanup 5, you get things like Spy Alert and Net Blockade, things that are going to stop flash content appearing through your browsers. And those apps really interrupt your surfing time. They stop any flash content being popped up. So I'd say it's not saving you the time of reading the manual and finding out how your OS works. It's sort of actively worse than that. It just gets in the way of your computing.
Right.
I mean, okay, read the manual and you won't need to ever bother with it.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, so Smith Micro's Internet Cleanup version 5.0, basically 14 pounds from Smith Micro. You can see it through the enhanced podcast link right now in the show. 2.5 out of 5 stars from James in the October issue. Our next product is iPhone headsets from Sennheiser, and it's the MM50 IP stereo headset. These are inexpensive headsets with a mic clicker that's compatible with both the first and second generation of the iPhone, right?
That's right. Sennheiser do 2 MM50 headsets. This is the second one, the IP one. And the big difference between them is that this one, there's a microphone in the cable, but also it's got, more importantly, it's got a recessed 3.5mm jack. That might sound a bit odd. The metal end of the jack, the part that goes in and picks up data from the headphone socket of an iPhone, that bit has plastic casing around it, which is very thin. So it will work with the first iPhones, which had I'm not sure if you remember, they've got a hole in the top, and it's hard to put a headphone jack down inside there. So what some vendors have done is make the plastic casing around the end of the headphones really narrow so it can go in.
Right. So James, I think one of the interesting things about these Sennheiser headsets is that they're not really too expensive, but you think even for 40 pounds that they really are better sounding than the headsets that come with your iPod from Apple.
I do. The headset that comes with the iPhone from Apple isn't very good. I don't like that hook design where you get big speaker heads which then hook over that soft outer part of your ear, mm-hmm. and then to sort of blast sound in. I much prefer ear cups which are more bullet shaped, like the different Denon earphones that there are, and because they spread the weight of the cable, and especially on these headsets which have mics, sometimes using metal and maybe a meter of cable and the speakers, you need to have a balance that in your ear so it's not all resting on the outside. And I just find the Apple ones, they're no good for really more than 15-20 minutes before your ears start to hurt.
Yeah, but the thing about these earbud types of headsets is that they don't really isolate or cancel out a lot of the external noise around you, right?
Yeah, there's two different ways that ambient noise is cut out from your listening experience with headsets and earphones. One of them is noise cancelling, where there is technology built into the cabling, which will counteract the frequencies of the outside world by dampening down those frequencies as you hear them in the ear. That's active technology. The second way is a noise isolation or sound isolation, where just the shape of the ear cup is enough to just block out the outside. Now, these ones are supposed to block out the outside noise through isolation method, through the shape mm-hmm. of them. Mm-hmm. But I found they didn't. They were too narrow. I tried the different ear cups that come with. You get a range of ear cups as you do with loads of different headsets.
But, so it just didn't do it.
It just didn't do it. Not for me. Not compared to some of the other ones on the market.
But for the price, though, it does pretty well.
It does. It does pretty well. It's something you can consider as an upgrade from the FreeSet, or supposedly FreeSet, that comes with your iPhone. They give you better sound quality, mm-hmm. and they're more comfortable.
So the Sennheiser MM50 IP stereo headset, £40. I'm sure some of you were wondering what the price was, because we just said the price was not too bad. It is £40 from Sennheiser. You can get through the Enhanced Podcast link. And a decent offering, despite the claims of sound isolation being off the mark from what James wrote. 4 out of 5 stars for these headsets. Let's move on to our third and final product. It is the TuneRanger from a company called Acertant. It's a music library piece of software for £12. Excellent utility for syncing media libraries across multiple iPods and Macs, right?
Yeah, this is really cool. What this software does, you download TuneRanger onto the two different Macs, or you get 4 licenses in the box, and you can do it on a Windows machine as well as a Mac. You then just dock in your iPod. It'll read the iPod, and it'll give you an option. Do you want to sync your library with the iPod, or do you want to sync your from the Mac to the iPod, or from the iPod to the Mac? So then you just press the button, and what the software does is equalize the library so that the library on your Mac and the library on the iPod is the same, even if that wasn't that your iPod mm-hmm. was originally paired with. So it means you can kind of, your music library starts to look level and the same across all of your Macs.
Right.
So if you're looking for a track, you know you've got it with you.
Basically, what this is doing, is my understanding, it stitches your music collections together,
yeah.
or just parts of it if you want,
yeah.
so you can avoid the scenario where you're searching endlessly for a song on your Mac to only then remember it's on your iPod.
Exactly. So if you've got a Mac which is 3 years old and you've got a brand new Mac, and your 3-year-old Mac's got loads and loads and loads of tracks on it, and your iPod's got the same amount of tracks on as well, when you get the new Mac, it would automatically sync, and it would just load up all the tracks from your iPod, and so that everything looks the same. And if as you sync in between, like say you've got one Mac at work and one Mac at home, as you take your iPod with you and you charge it up, you pop in the cable throughout the day, it'll just sync everything. It's a nice little utility. It's really cheap. It's only £12.
Yeah.
And it just keeps everything really simple, and you don't have to sort of worry about syncing your music libraries across the internet or some local network or whichever way you do it.
Cool. All right, TuneRanger, £12 from Acertant, again through the Enhanced Podcast link on this show right now. 4 out of 5 stars, an excellent utility for syncing your media libraries across multiple iPods and Macs. All right, James, thanks so much for going over 3 great products. We'll definitely visit with you again next month.
You're very welcome. Take it easy.
James Ellerbeck is the reviews editor for Mac Format Magazine. 15 pages of reviews begin on page 81 in the October issue, which is on sale now. Our most popular segment of the show is Questions and Answers with Trevor Middleton, and he joins us again to answer your questions. Hello, Trevor.
Hi, Brent. How are you doing?
I'm very good. If you would like to send a question to Trevor, you can do so at machelpme@futurenet.co.uk, and don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. Question one comes to us from Maureen Muschamp of Wirksworth, Derbyshire, and her question is very simple. I used to use MacLink Plus for file conversions on my old Mac. Now I have a new one, but do I need it? Trevor.
Okay, well, wow, this one takes me back a little. MacLink Plus was one of those applications that worked in the background to translate some documents in the days of classic Mac OS. Years and years ago, way before your time, Brad. Now, basic version was provided with practically every Mac, and you could then buy the full version to obtain more document translators. Now, these days, even Mac OS X's built-in word processor, which is called TextEdit, will open Word documents. All you have to do is hold down the Control key on your keyboard as you click on the Word file, and from the contextual menu, choose Open With, and then text edit from the submenu. Now, having said that, there's now a new type of Word document, of course, whose file name ends in .docx rather than .doc. So if you want to open those in text edit, you'll need the version that comes with macOS 10.4.2 or higher. You can check, of course, which version of macOS 10 you have by choosing About This Mac from the Apple menu in the top left-hand corner of your screen. Alternatively, if you're into free stuff, and I know I am, there's a suite of Office software that's completely free from www.neooffice.org. So, in other words, you don't need MacLink Plus these days, as most files can be opened in macOS 10 or with other free applications. Brad.
All right, and question two comes to us from Andrew McNabb of County Armagh in Northern Ireland, who wrote us, I'm a music student and I import a lot of CDs into iTunes and then transfer them to my iPod. I bought a lot of box set CDs and it takes forever to import them all. I really like the new USB SuperDrive for the MacBook Air and was wondering if it would work with my 20-inch silver iMac. Could I then import two CDs at a time? How would this affect the running of my 2.4 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo iMac? Trevor.
Okay, well, I have an iMac with exactly the same spec as yours, and I've been importing more than one CD at a time on it with no ill effects. I've been trying this out since I got your question. Incidentally, there are plenty of other optical drives on the market that will do the job just as well as the Apple one. I could also mention that there are a lot of great classical music download sites, such as eMusic, but if you're anything like me, you do like to have a booklet to read as well as music to listen to. So the best of luck with your studies, and good ripping.
Absolutely good ripping. And our final question is from Sonal in Wales, who writes us, I'm planning on upgrading my Mac Mini to an iMac later this year and have a simple question. I often leave my Mac Mini on overnight, ripping DVDs or encoding video, and because I use a separate monitor, I can turn it off. Does the iMac have a separate monitor power-off button, different to the system power-off button, to let me turn only the monitor off, or do I have to rely on the monitor's sleep timer to deactivate the monitor? Trevor.
Okay, well, so now there's only one power button on the iMac, which means you'll have to use the energy saver to set a time delay for turning the monitor off if you want to do that. You could also use the desktop and screensaver system preferences to set a hotspot for activating a screensaver. So no separate monitor off button on the iMac. Brad.
And Trevor, thanks so much again for helping us with questions and answers. We'll see you again.
Okay, see you next time.
And you can send your questions to Trevor at machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac for Math this week. My thanks to Chris Finn, Graham Barlow, James Ellerbeck, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakalaropoulou. You can always send us your comments and suggestions to macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk. Join us for our next edition on Monday, the 6th of October. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.